This is 90.3 KEDM Public Radio. I'm Corey Crow. We're at KEDM's Policy in a Pint. This one's called Homeless for the Holidays, and we're here with local folks that are dealing with our homeless issues and rehabilitation. Providing hope is one of the big things. And joining us today, we've got a room full of folks at Militello Sport City Grill in West Monroe. I want to say thanks to them for having us out here tonight. I've got Captain Jerry Casey. We'll start with Captain Casey at the Salvation Army. You and I had a conversation this week, and you said, you know, homeless is bad, but hopeless is bad. You're trying to instill hope in people. Talk to me about how you do that and get them back on the right track.
Yeah, what we do at Salvation Army is we try to instill hope, period. Without hope, there's nothing. So that's why originally they would come into our shelter at 4 p.m. That's why we bring them in at 2 p.m. That's why we designed the Courtyard of Hope. The other thing is, you know, like I said, we're a church first. And we put the love of Jesus into everybody. You know, we don't force it down their throat by any means. It flows beautifully in our system. But instilling hope, that's what giving them water in the Courtyard of Hope is about. That's what letting them in early is about. That's what sitting there and talking with them is about. That's what I've also, the Salvation Army has grouped up with all the agencies in the Northeast Louisiana area. We're not doing this alone by any means. As a matter of fact, 318 is the reason why we're open. They stepped up to the plate, they gave us some financing, and they got our doors open. We opened up 13 months early because of 318, and I want to thank you personally for that. But we instill hope every inch of the way. No matter what we're doing, it's about instilling hope. We have caseworkers that come 3 days a week. We have access to multiple rehabs because, as Billy had said earlier, addiction and mental health are two big factors with homelessness. It's two tremendous factors that have to be addressed immediately. But you have to start off by asking them, what's your name? How do you feel today? Make somebody feel welcome. Don't make them feel scared or less than. We always want to make somebody feel more than and not afraid. And that's how we instill hope every inch of the way. That's why we have a clean, healthy, safe environment.
Killian Hicks is with us. He's an audience member, and we see him from time to time at our Policy and Pint events. You tell me you started volunteering at the Desired Street Shelter. Tell me about your experience and why you got involved.
I got involved back in April, actually, with the Desired Street Shelter through a charity I started called #SpareSomeChange. And what that was is I took mason jars to businesses all around town for people. When you check out and you have a little bit of extra change, you put it right there in the mason jar. And people said to me, like, man, how much money can that raise? You know, it's just pennies, but those pennies added up. And since April, it's raised over $2,000 for the Desired Street Shelter. And with that, I volunteer 3 days a week. I do the breakfast shift at the shelter. And going along with the hope, you can't understand how much, you know, some pancake sausage and a hot cup of coffee can do for people. They come in and they're tired, they're cold, they don't know where they're going to sleep every night. And you're that smiling face that can be, here's your breakfast, how are you doing today, what are you planning on doing? And just seeing the change that little bit can bring definitely is something that will touch you on it, you know.
Billy, a question that I have, and I guess Killian just kind of threw it in my head a little bit. Let's talk about this cycle of being homeless. Sometimes this cycle repeats over and over and over again. How long is the typical person homeless? I know you can't probably put a number on that, but what do you usually see?
Well, it depends on how quickly you can get them in for the treatment that they need. Because homelessness, first of all, no one wants to be homeless. However, because of affordable housing, addictions, and some other things, they don't have a choice. Many of these individuals have to choose between getting their medication, paying the light bill, or paying their home, paying their house note. Well, the average apartment runs about $700 a month. Many of these individuals either have no income or their own fixed income, SSI, usually $640 a month. Well, if you got an apartment in a nice area, you're looking at $550 or above for that apartment. So
you know, you're stuck in the cycle.
Well, and here's the thing. I really don't believe in eradicating homelessness. The word says they will be with us always, and I believe that, and I think that that's a way for us to humble ourselves and be who we're supposed to be by serving those individuals that are in need.
Dr. Montek Sizer is with us from the HSA, the Human Services Authority. Tell me about what you guys do. You're a state agency, but you a few years ago underwent a name change, so folks may not know what the Human Services Authority is. And how do you help folks that are in one of these situations maybe get treatment that they need and get back on track?
Well, first of all, let me thank you for hosting this. Let me also thank the panelists for your compassion and the work that you do, and for those who are here. We are the safety net for all of the mental health, addiction, developmental disability, and prevention services in Northeast Louisiana. We provide an array of services because we recognize that mental health issues are related to a lot of different societal challenges. And so as a consequence, we do a lot of integrated health care. And what that means is that we focus on dealing with the mental health challenges and addiction challenges, but we also recognize people have some hypertension and diabetes and other types of ailments due to not taking good care of themselves. We also recognize, too, that there's social determinants to health. And what that means is that all this stuff occurs within a context. So as you heard, a person is homeless for multiple reasons. It's not one reason. And the homeless population is varied. The fastest growing homeless population is women and children who work every day, as alluded to. And then you have those who have significant mental health and addiction challenges. And then you have people who work every day, and then you have people who don't work every day. And so you have issues associated with not having affordable housing and not having adequate jobs and the like. And so it's a complex mix. And because of that, we have, again, created an integrated healthcare model. We have workforce development programs that's associated with anybody who's got a mental health or addiction problem. We have inpatient addiction facilities that we created, as well as outpatients that we created. We are connected with all the rural hospitals and the FQHCs in the region because we recognize people need vision, they need dental, they need other types of healthcare related things. We know that folks need to work, so anybody who comes to our clinic, they'll get screened, and if there's a need for a job opportunity or soft skills, then they're referred into our second opportunity to workforce program. So we're trying to address the issues collectively and holistically, and working with good folks like this that you have as panelists. I will also say to you that we have about over $500,000 already invested in transitional housing throughout this region. That's a significant amount of money for that not to be our core business. But we recognize, too, that it has to be a continuum of care. Okay, we provide transitional housing, but what comes before the transition? What comes after the transition in terms of permanent placement? And that is not only a policy issue, it is a societal issue, because all of this stuff pressed down, shaken together, produce what we got. And if we want a different outcome, we all must do something different. So I'm encouraged here today by what I've heard, by those who have shown up. And I think if we work collectively and very strategically, we may not eradicate this issue, but certainly we can significantly reduce it.
Dr. Sizer has some good points. There's a lot of, I mean, there's hundreds of pieces to this puzzle, and they all have to work together. This is a team effort, isn't it, Captain Casey? I mean, it's not just the Salvation Army or the Desired Street Shelter or the HSA. You guys are really all in the networking business and getting these people to the right folks, right?
Absolutely. The Salvation Army has been here in Monroe for 92 years, and by no means can we stand on our own. We can only stand together, period. And I am willing to work with anyone who is willing to work with us, period. Under any circumstance, for any reason, on any way, period. I was not able to put this back together in 9 months by myself by any means. As a matter of fact, if you look around me, you'll find that every person around me is smarter, bigger, stronger, and has better managerial, you know, things than I have. It's just, it's a group effort, and this community is outstanding. I've never seen such power. I do a lot of disaster work. Salvation Army does a lot of disaster work. They've sent me in a lot of disasters. Monroe is a community that doesn't even realize how great they are. They are like a community that's in a disaster constantly with the way they group together. They stick together. They help each other. I've never seen anything like it except when I'm in a disaster and, you know, for the first time in 10 years, you meet your neighbor, you're having a sandwich. You know what I mean? But Monroe is like that all the time without a disaster. It's the most amazing thing I've ever seen. And I'm just so blessed to be here. And that is why we've been as successful as we have, because of the community.
We talk about it's all about putting everybody in the right path and getting them there. Matt Villarreal's with us from Cover the 318. Matt, your day job, you're like a big-time advertising marketing guy for CenturyLink, right?
I work in external communications. And Cover the 318 just kind of started out as a community effort, and it just so happened that we all had corporate backgrounds. Now we're just working with what we got and really trying to push for this local issue.
So this is easy. If you can sell internet service and you can sell, make me buy things, you can point me towards trying to help the area homeless, right?
I sure can. And, it's like everyone's saying, it's super important that we all come together and really work together as a community. And, I mean, we've already seen, a lot of funds raised, and these panelists are doing wonderful things with their organizations as well.
I want to ask Billy, this segment was supposed to be about hope. I'm talking about good stuff. Give me some good stories. Tell me somebody who's gone through and is successful and doing good stuff now.
Well, there are several out there. We had this one family. It's a mother and her son came through about 6 months, a year ago. And they were from Houston. And she was totally disabled in a wheelchair. And her son, young guy, it's about 20, nowhere to stay. We actually put them in a hotel for about a month. And finally, we helped her to get a disability. We helped her to get the other assistance she needed and connected her with medical facilities. She was able to get back on her medication. She now presently lives in an apartment over off of 18th Street. She is working from home, and her son is working at Brookshire's. We've had several individuals to re-enroll in school out at ULM. We have several individuals now that come by the shelter during the day, and they're going to school at night. So there are a lot of stories out there.
A lot of good stories. I've got a question from one of our audience members. Your name and your question.
Vanessa Clay, and this question is directed to Captain Jerry. I wanted to know, do you provide case management, when and what time of the day, if you do so?
Yeah, we provide it 3 days a week between the hours of, I'd say, usually they come in about 4 o'clock and they stay till 6 or 7, 3 days a week.
Another question from our audience members. Your name and your question.
My name is Cheyenne Austin. My question is for Captain Jerry. I've stayed in the Salvation Army a couple weeks ago, and I see that you guys provide jobs as a ring beller. Bell ringer. My question is, with the donations that you get from the clothes boxes, do you give them uniforms to wear since they have to wear a white shirt and slacks?
Well, we hire 40 or so bell ringers. Many of them are from our sheltering system. We do background checks on everyone. We have to do that. We're putting them out in public. You know, they're representing. To answer your question, no, we don't give them the stuff from the boxes. What we do is we give them a voucher, because I have a thrift store, a small thrift store over in West Monroe. And we give them a voucher, and they are able to go there and get what they need. They don't have to be bell ringers to use the voucher, to get the clothes, to get the shoes, to get the jacket. They don't have to be a bell ringer by any means. But yes, if they need stuff to wear, a coat, a warm coat, a sweater, some socks, a jacket, we give them a voucher through our social service department so that we can track each and every move. Just giving it out blatantly is not an educational move. You know, everything, we're structure. We want to be structure. We have to show them structure. We have to show them that they can't just walk up and take things. No problem. You come in, I have a social service worker. No one is denied anything in our shelter as far as what we have in our thrift store.
I need to ask, it's Christmas time. It's the time, I guess, everybody thinks Salvation Army because the man's ringing the bell and he's got the little red kettle. How big a time is this for the year for you guys? Is this a lot of your funding for the year? And how important are those kettles to your operation?
This is our biggest fundraiser of the year. This money from the kettles supports all of our programs. Yes, we have a 318 helps us out tremendously, but it costs $20,000 or so a month to run a shelter. But the kettle money runs all our programs. We send people to camp. We have food pantries. We do utility assistance. We do endless assistance. I mean, clothing, you know, housing, not housing. We do clothing, we do furniture for their housing. Let's say they have a fire, something to that effect. We help on so many different levels. I don't even know how many. I really don't. It's for everything that we do. This is our one and only fundraiser of the year. We do it for 30 days, and it supports us throughout the year.
Billy Varner is with us from the Desired Street Shelter. Billy, I don't know if you're the man who pays the bills every month. I think you are. Mm-hmm. What's the nut on running the Desired Street Shelter? How much money you need to make every month to stay in business?
It's about $35,000
a month,
I would think. Most of our funding comes from businesses, donors. Like I said, we don't take any state or federal funds, and we're supported by about 52 area churches. $35,000 to $45,000, I think.
Every month.
Every month.
That's a lot of money needs to come from our area. We're going to talk about ways folks can get involved in our next segment. You're listening to Policy in a Pint. This is 90.3 KEDM Public Radio. We'll be back with more after this.